We are the Church of the New Millennium, Diana Eck writes. The church, the place, the theology, the vision that the world needs. We have something here that is critical for our era, so divided by race and by religion and by ideology, as she writes. The oneness of God, the oneness of love, the love of neighbor and service to humanity, the world is in need of us. That's a pretty bold statement and a pretty high bar, but inspiring too. And just a little intimidating. I want to take a step back and take a look at what she might mean and what that might mean for you and for me. We do have a universal theology. We do not reduce the mystery of the divine. We do not bind or badger. We do not aim to coerce or restrict. There is no one creed, no one statement to which we must all profess belief. We do not claim to have the one true path, and we take wisdom from many spiritual sources, welcome different religious perspectives on life. There is, you could say, a lot of room in our theology, a wide open field, as a friend of mine described it to me once. Which is a beautiful thing. It creates room for each of us to discern truth from wherever we stand. Whether we were raised Jewish or Catholic or Protestant or UU, or whether we were shaped by another faith or some combination, we come here with diverse understandings and we make room for them all. We are less likely here to pit our beliefs against those of others. We are less likely here to take a rigid stand and close our ears and eyes to the possible truths of another faith. And for some, our openness has been a life-changing relief from the feeling that you had to believe something that did not make sense to you. And that religious openness lays the groundwork for us to be open in other ways, too, across all lines of division, to enter into the perspective of another, take it in, see freshly, and become a bridge, a translator, a mediator. Here, we encourage each person to question party lines as much as creeds, to question the ways in which we've always looked at things and see if maybe there is another way to see. It means that in any one moment, we know we don't have the final answer, and neither does anyone else. So this is what Diana Eck means, I think, when she says that we broaden the mystery of the divine, that we are inclusive, that the world, this world so torn along these lines of ideology, race, and religion, the world needs a wide embrace like ours. But it also needs more. And so do we. We need more than just openness, more than just inclusion of lots of viewpoints. We need more than just room, more than a wide open field in which to wander, because when we just wander, we may get lost. When we define our faith as simply not this or not that, we risk losing our sense of direction. Without concrete sets of beliefs, we are vulnerable to picking and choosing what's comfortable for us, and we run the risk of missing out on challenges that call on our courage and help us to grow. When we are aimless, we cannot move forward. We are not the lowest common denominator, Eck wrote, but when we focus primarily on how open we are, we risk becoming just that. When we are open to too many ideas and theologies, we risk having none, and then we cannot be a beacon or the church the world so badly needs. Which is why, when you talk to ministers about how UUs can believe anything we want, those ministers will, after suppressing a flinch, probably say something to you like, well, yes, and well, no. We may welcome many beliefs, but when we are at our best, we do not simply stay there. We covenant, We covenant with one another. We covenant around common values, visions, and principles. We covenant with one another so we can challenge each other and move forward together. Covenant is a core piece of our theology, part of our Unitarian Universalist DNA, baked in nearly 500 years ago in 1648 in a document called the Cambridge Platform. Covenant was our alternative to creed, our alternative to the static idea of what we must do or must believe. It is instead all about making promises in relationship, living, breathing, evolving. Now, if you've been around this church for a while, you'll recognize the term covenant. We will often read one at the beginning of a meeting. Covenants say things like start and end on time, listen respectfully, speak thoughtfully. Covenants can function like rules of the road. Slow down here, no parking there, stay on your side of the street, buckle your seatbelt. Most of the time, we don't notice them or pay close attention to them, but we're glad they're there when they prevent accident or injury, keeping us moving along in relative harmony as we make our way down the roads of life, which is great. That can be really helpful in keeping meetings on track and a useful reminder of how we want to be together. And covenant can be more than that. It can be much more than that. Some covenants are relatively easy to keep, like staying on your side of the road. But covenants get interesting and transformational when our commitment goes deep or when life gets hard, or both, times when we need that seatbelt. I think of life's significant moments, like a wedding. Everything that goes around a wedding makes it so that when those two people look at each other and say, I do, even people in the audience get chills up and down their spine. Big promises, heralding big future changes. Or today is Mother's Day. The moment you realized you were going to be a mom or a dad or an aunt or uncle or grandparent or godparent or responsible for some new life, on that day, what promises did you make to that little person still unborn? Or at some point, we recognize that the people we care about will not always be with us, and something shifts, and we probably make promises around how we behave, what we plan to do in the future around that realization. Those were examples that Doug Zielinski, then director of leadership development at the UUA regional office, described in a workshop on covenant. Big promise moments, what makes us notice them, and how they change us. Those are big covenants and big callings that get lived out in little moments and little ways all the time. Taking out the trash, helping with homework, simply being more kind. And they get broken in little moments and little ways all the time. Forgetting to take out the trash, being too busy to help with homework, snapping in a flash of irritation, which is actually a really important part of the covenant story, a really important part of our theology. We don't believe in original sin. We don't believe that when we break a promise, we must be punished, must be threatened, must feel bad, or believe that we are bad. These are not moments that lead to eternal damnation. They are, as Doug notes, spiritual opportunities. Sometimes you can end up in a place better than where you started when you break a promise and decide to go back and make it right. And sometimes you break a promise and you learn something that helps you better understand what you are really called to do. So you have these big promises that get lived out in little ways, but you also have little moments that over time add up to big changes. They happen in our personal lives, and they happen in our congregational lives. Those feel it in your gut moments of truth. Am I going to make this promise, keep this promise, break it, or make it anew? Doug mentions a few of the congregational kind. Will I choose to gossip or not? Will I talk to that newcomer or not? Will I put the same number down for my pledge that I did last year, or will I give it fresh thought, he said. Will I share the good news, tell my friends about the ways my church has had an impact in my life? How do you want this place to change your life? Was the question we asked in our new member class. What are you willing to risk? A promise is a risk when we bring our hearts, when we really live it. And signs and seatbelts really matter when roads get slippery, when the weather is stormy, when other drivers are inattentive or everyone is going too fast. I think of one of my favorite quotes, a ship can remain in the harbor, but that is not what ships are for. What would it look like for each of us to live covenant, to live promises, live them true enough so that we could all with confidence say that in a world divided by race and religion and ideology, Unitarian and Universalism is our highest calling? If we could all say with confidence that we are the religion of the new millennium, a beacon that the world so sorely needs, what would that take? We say a covenant, actually, every Sunday. We said it just a little while ago. But sometimes I wonder if it can feel a little like the stop sign, that we stop, slow down, and pass every day. We don't notice it consciously. This is our great covenant, we say, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. And whenever we all say it, I feel peaceful, I feel loving, I feel helpful in that moment, which is nice. But one of the points that Doug Zielinski was making in that presentation, which I encourage you to watch, and I'll put a link in my sermon, which will be on the website, is that it's in the taking of those promises to the streets, so to speak. It's in the really taking them to heart where the action happens. Because here, well, we do dwell together very peacefully, especially when we're listening to the choir or Nonena's beautiful piano playing. But what if dwelling together in peace was more than feeling peaceful in a service, more than being polite or being nice to each other? What if it was about creating a deeper peace, untangling misunderstandings or misconceptions that sometimes get left to lie? What would happen if we were to more directly engage in tough topics? Can we not only deepen the peace, but also continue dwelling together? When really tough stuff rolls in, it gets harder to stay. It's hard. It gets hard in our personal lives. It gets hard in congregational life. But imagine if we knew we were in it for the greater good. What if we knew we all have a commitment to stay at the table? What if life-changing, congregation-transforming conversations, what life-changing, congregation-transforming conversations might be possible then? To seek the truth in love. What if seeking the truth in love is about having those conversations, telling more of our truth so that we are not simply people with our own personal perspectives, but where we take the risk to really engage our differences? Like the other day in a conversation with a member of this congregation after the sermon on white supremacy culture, I was heartened that this person came right out and told me what they thought. Was full of passion and conviction. This person did not agree with some of the things I had said or the ways I had said them, and we had a great talk. And since then, another person came to me too. This person had spent a lot of time in reflection, had read up on the topic, and then came and shared their thoughts, their feelings, shared with me what they heard and how it impacted them. And I shared what I saw and what my big hopes had been for conversations about race, for conversations about anything. It was good. It was forward moving. We each learned something, I think, and it's the kind of conversation I really appreciate having. And helping one another. What if we were more willing not only to help each other, but to ask for help? What if we could tell there was room to be vulnerable, to show when we're hurting, admit when we feel weak, where we could use a shoulder to lean on? What closeness might we create if we really let others in? Can we learn to pause, step out of the ways we might generally do things, and try a different way? Notice moments of truth and be willing to risk something. There is a lot in our world that is hard right now. And there is a lot in our theology that can be powerful and healing and inspirational when we deeply engage it. Our theology of openness and wideness and welcoming embrace is an aspect of love. And our challenging, step up to the plate, push you, pull you theology of covenant is an aspect of love. And on this Mother's Day, may we know that we are loved exactly as we are. And may we know that there is nothing in the way of each of us becoming just as courageous, as strong, as fierce, as justice-seeking as we ever imagined we wanted to be. May we experience both. May we offer both as we answer the call of love today and every day. May it be so. Amen. For our final hymn, our closing hymn, it's number 1014. And you will notice once you open your hymnal that the title in your order of service is different from the title in the book. And it has a new title because not everyone can stand, and we want to be inclusive of everyone. And just as important, standing on the side of love, the way the title used to be, seems to imply that there are sides, with us on one side and other people on the other, and I don't think love works that way. I think love includes all, so let's sing this with new lyrics. We are answering the call of love. Please rise in body or in spirit. I invite you to join hands for our benediction and closing words. As we listen to the truth in our hearts, as we make, keep, break, and remake the promises that lead us toward our highest common calling, may we find a bright new day dawning when love overcomes divides and one day at a time create and recreate the church of the new millennium, a beacon for our time. May it be so. Go in peace.